This is Hilary Martin for Free Radio Burlington from the occupied territories of Palestine. I am here to witness the realities of the Israeli occupation of Palestine, and specifically, I'm here as a farmer with my farm partner, Sarah DeSantis. We are looking to understand the effects of the occupation, the apartheid wall, and the Intifada on Palestinian agriculture. We went with a group of North American farmers to Ma'an Development Center in Ramallah, a Palestinian NGO working with women, youth, and farmers for sustainable development in Palestine. The following is an excerpt of our conversation with Sami Heder, the founder of Ma'an Development Center, and Chris Simmons from Victoria, British Columbia.
Thank you very much for your time and asking some questions. If I may, please just ask you a few questions. And she mentioned the 123 internationally outlawed pesticides that are in use in the territories in Palestine. Would you be able to mention how many there are, who sells them, why they're outlawed, how come they're being used in Palestinian territories?
As you know, if you talk about in previous years, let's say before 20, 30 years ago, the Palestinians were not using chemicals and pesticides, and it was more organic farming. There was more development at this site, especially the Israelis are controlling the market and controlling even marketing our agricultural products, and also they control all the inputs for the agriculture sector here in Palestine. So they start selling chemicals, pesticides for the Palestinians, and we know that there are several pesticides and chemicals which are prohibited internationally, and of course they are produced in Israel. Part of it are produced in Israel, and part of it they bring it through it to the Israeli companies and merchants. Of course there is no control on this, and this is one of the main problems that we are facing. There is no control on the pesticides. It's free in the Israelis. And it's very easy for the Israelis to bring these chemicals to the Palestinians. And we are trying to work at this level to try to develop the awareness of the Palestinian farmers. And also we try to work with the Ministry of Agriculture to try to regulate this sector in a better way and in a safer way for the Palestinians. We have a problem. We have a serious problem at this level, and I think if some of these they are part of the 30 dozen which are well known internationally, are still used in Palestine. Actually, when you mentioned about composting, and we tried to introduce several ideas for the farmers, and we used to have a permaculture center, which is like permanent agriculture with a demonstration site of 5 dunums in Selfid district in a village called Merda, where we developed several techniques, and we used to have trainers from Australia, England, Germany, some Arab trainers, and Palestinians. So we were working there, and we started a program funded by Heinrich Bell. Heinrich Bell, right?
Yes.
Support of Heinrich Bell. We did a good program in composting at a community level. Several villages were working at this level, and we start producing compost. For the first time, it was produced for commercial reasons in Palestine. And one of the main clients and actually were the settlers. Yeah, because the center was on the main road, and we were selling our waste for the settlers in that area. Of course, that area was totally affected by the Israeli, by the sewage of the one of the biggest settlements, which is Ariel. Ariel is one of the biggest, actually the biggest Israeli settlement in West Bank.
The second biggest?
The second.
Ma'ale Adumim.
Ma'ale Adumim is the first. And, you know, you can, if you go there to this settlement, you'll find the swimming pools, you'll find everything there. And our villages, they don't have water for drinking. And they pump their sewage openly with open, you know, have on the fields of Marda, Selfit, and there are a lot of contamination of the water resources in that area. The Palestinians who were for the last several years, you know, decades, were relying on these resources for their daily consumption, now they can't use it because it's not safe for human consumption. This is one of the problems of these settlements. They are not just taking the lands of the Palestinians and destroying their fields and prohibited them to cultivate their lands and picking the olives. Also, they damage their water resources through the sewage that they pump it to the fields, and it's open and you can see it very clear in Sefid district.
Would you be able to mention, please, some other barriers that the Palestinian farmers face in marketing their produce and why food security is so urgent?
Actually, there are a lot of problems that the farmers are facing now. One of these things, main problems, is the marketing. Yani, they are producing, and our farmers are clever farmers who used to farm for hundreds of years their lands, and they are well known of their expertise and experience in the area of agriculture. There is no marketing. Yani, it's impossible in sometimes to sell your product or to bring your agricultural products from one area to another. Like bringing agricultural products from Selfit to Ramallah, sometimes it's very difficult. It's impossible. This is one of the main problems. Bringing the products from Gaza to the West Bank, it's almost impossible. We can't sell to Gaza. They can't sell their products to West Bank, and we are one community. You know, the other thing about the confiscation of land. More than 60% of the West Bank is confiscated by the Israeli military authorities, you know. And when you are talking about, they confiscated the most fertile land, like Jordan Valley, all the Jordan Valley. They confiscated the Jordan Valley. They confiscated the most fertile lands in the north part of West Bank, also in Gaza Strip. So the confiscation of land is one of the main problems for that hinder the agriculture sector. Also, what's happening during the Intifada, hundreds of thousands of trees and tens of thousands of dunams were destroyed by the Israelis. They are trying to hit the farmers and to affect their livelihood, and this is one of the aims of the wall. For instance, now you can find that their land are behind the wall, their homes in the eastern part, and their lands and their water resources behind the wall. They can't reach it, they can't cultivate it, and they open gates for the farmers in specific hours, as if it's a prison, real prison for. So under these circumstances, if you go to Qalqilia, one of the main towns of West Bank that produce citrus, you know, it's very famous in citrus. Now it's destroyed. They are isolated. They can't sell. They can't produce. Most of their lands were confiscated. The water resource. We can't control our water resources. It's under their control. We are not permitted to dig wells, artisan wells. We can't. You know, it's under their control. Even doing maintenance for the water drinking system in Area A needs permission from the Israelis. So they control everything. The agriculture sector, if you go back to the 80s and late 80s, it was the contribution of the agriculture sector reached around 33% of the GDP. Now it's less than 9%. It used to absorb around 33% also of the labor force. Now less than 12% of the labor force is working in agricultural sector. Of course, we can't. It's very difficult, and they put a lot of hinders and obstacles for the farmers to market, not internally, also to export to outside Palestine. For instance, they produce flowers or strawberry in Gaza Strip. When the time for picking the flowers and the strawberry, they have to pick it and sell it, they close the the borders. So the farmers end with losses and deficits, and this is a vicious, moving in a vicious cycle. This is what we are facing now. Lot and lot of problems on the water, on the infrastructure, on destroying the main infrastructure for the farmers. These are some of the barriers that we are facing now.
Under these conditions, you anticipate that the traditional agricultural methods will be lost because of these barriers?
Actually, there is a trend now to return back to these traditional methods, because the input is less. The farmers, 30% of the inputs in the agricultural sector is spent on chemicals, pesticides, and all these things. And so if they return back to the traditional ways, and traditional ways, that doesn't mean less quantities and less quality. On the contrary, we are eating a lot of things which are poisoned, actually. When you eat things that are produced on chemicals and depends on chemicals that are not allowed to be used, we are killing and poisoning our people, our farmers. And this is why we feel that it's very important to continue our work. And traditional, sometimes it gives a bad impression. That tradition, that means that it's opposite to progressive and opposite to modern techniques. No, on the contrary, that doesn't contradict. You can use organic farming on high level scale, and that doesn't mean that you have to use very basic things. But even the basic things now, with less money, with for farmers, they don't have money to buy chemicals and pesticides. And maybe it's time that they can start thinking about return back to the previous methods that they used to use it.
Mm-hmm. Would you be able to just mention, please, what the anti-terrorism clauses that NGOs are being asked to sign on to, and why it's detrimental?
This is a new thing that USAID is trying to impose on all the NGOs who are getting funds from USAID. We are not getting direct support and direct funds from USAID. We are getting the funds and the grants through American PVOs, like CARE, like Save the Children, World Vision, CHF, etc. We have around 35 American PVOs who are working in Palestine as companies, and some of them they are international organizations, American organizations. So we used to get funds for different sectors. Like capacity building for NGOs, like developing the infrastructure of the villages, working in democracy in different areas. Starting from the 30th of March 2003, the USAID issued this annex, and this annex says that all the NGOs, Palestinian NGOs, who are getting support from USAID, they have to sign this annex, which says that we are not supposed to give or support any individuals, groups, or organizations who are supporting terrorist activities, and they are saying who are the terrorist activities. And of course, there is a general position against this for several reasons. First of all, we are against terrorism. يعني all the Palestinians are against terrorism. And the problem is, what do you mean by terrorism? Participating in a demonstration against the Israeli occupation, is this terrorism? يعني struggling to get your freedom, is this terrorism? يعني we can't consider these as terrorism, you know. The second reason that the NGOs are not working, we are not political parties, and we are not supposed to take political decisions, you know. And we are part of that community. We are working to develop our community, to work with the marginalized people, letting the people be more active in shaping their future in Palestine in a democratic way. So we have standards of our working. We have criteria how we work with our people, with the trainees, with the beneficiaries, etc. And we think that we are working on professional criteria, not based on political criteria. The third reason that this position or this annex contradicts the Palestinian law. Because according to the Palestinian law that regulate the NGO sector, we are not supposed to take any conditional funds. This is a conditional fund. So if we take it, that means we'll be subject to interrogation and subject to taken to the court by the Palestinian Authority. So we tried to convince the USAID is that we are working to develop a democratic society in Palestine, democratic plural society in Palestine. And we can't, for instance, ask any person about a political ID and political affiliation if he wants to come and take a course in project management, or if he wants to participate in a workshop in democracy or training in democracy. Now there is a position that any person, any trainees, who's supposed to get more than 80 hours of training, we supposed to do vetting for the trainees. That means we have to send their names to the USAID, and they have to check on security issues, and which contradicts the professional way. And we work according to professional. If this person had his brother was arrested by the Israelis for doing the military operation or participating in political group, that it's not our problem. We are not responsible for these things. You know, what we are trying to do is not we are sure that we'll not give any funds, any support for any political activities or political groups. This is, we can make sure. But when you say that all these organizations are, which were listed by the USAID, are terrorist activities, terrorist organizations, they are more than 80% of the Palestinian people. More, you know. And so how we can take a decision to say that we are supposed not to give any support? Of course, we can't give any funds for any political or anything beyond the contract that we sign. But we can't say that these organizations are terrorist organizations. It's very difficult. There is a special thing in Palestine that they have to take it into consideration. We are not Ibn Laden. We are not, they have to differentiate between people who were struggling for the last 54 years to get our freedom, to have an independent state like all other people in the world, and people who are doing terrorist activities against civilians or against infrastructure in different countries. Of course, we condemn these activities, but for our struggle, we can't condemn our history. We can't say that our history is terrorism. And if you refer back to all the UN resolutions, they support our struggle. And they support our return of right to Palestine. They support our right to establish a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza. They consider West Bank, Gaza Strip, and Jerusalem as areas which are under occupation. And for any people who are under occupation, the people has the right to struggle to get their freedom. And I think Israel is the last occupation in the world. And I don't think that all the civilized countries should continue supporting the last occupation in the world. I mean, it's enough. 54 years of occupation, 54 years of people who are years people 4 to 5 million Palestinians who are still living outside their homes, and any Jew in the world can return if he's from Uganda or South Africa or from Colombia or from, he has the right to come and to take our land and to live here. And we don't have our right to bring our brothers, sisters, and uncles from who were living here, and they were, you know, expelled out of their countries in 1948 or 1967. They don't have the right to return back. This is not fair, any, and this is why we can't sign this. And there is a general, let's say, position against this. We are trying to find a solution. Yeah, we know that this is an international act, and it's not just for Palestine, but also we can't say that it's applicable to Palestinian people. And, we have 1,200 NGOs, most of them, majority of the Palestinian NGOs took a decision not to sign this act.
So in your opinion, what are the main things that need to happen to ameliorate, to make better the situation for farmers in Palestine and for the agricultural economy and the agricultural culture?
Yeah, the support can be done in different ways. For instance, the first important thing and the priority now is to enhance or to help the farmers to stay on their lands, and which is not easy now. You know, when a farmer is losing, a farmer that he used to have 100 dunams or 50 dunams, and he was cultivating these lands, and he was earning his living and his family living out of this land, and now suddenly within few hours he loses his land, and he loses his income. So the important thing is to support the farmers' rights. This is why we can't sign this. And there is a general to support, the, let's say, trying to find them against this ways, like not just financially. Financial, it's one of the aspects that we can help the farmers, but also politically. That they have the right to continue living on their lands. This is very important through with international solidarity, with the groups that that we have now in Palestine, people that come from different countries, support the farmers, stop with the farmers, and trying, some of the activists, they lost their lives because they were defending the people, trying to not allowing for the Israelis to take their lands and confiscate. This is very important. The other thing is to help the farmers who lost their lands behind the war, to support them at the political level, economic level, and raise the awareness and raise the conscience of the international people about their issue. Yeah, because these people, they are not seen as victims, you know. They seen some people, they consider them, they are as if they are terrorists, although they are not participating in military operations or doing activities against Israel. What they are asking that they have is that we want to live in peace on our land, and that's what they are living, what they are calling for. And they were living for hundreds of years on these lands, and it's a very simple question. They need to continue. Now with this war, there is no hope for the Palestinians. There is no hope for the farmers, and there is no way to establish a Palestinian independent state. There is no way. When you are talking about these, bento stands that they established, the confiscation, more confiscation of lands, more settlements. We have now around 200 settlements, and some Israeli figures, they say more than 200 settlements in the West Bank and Gaza. We have more than 240,000 settlers who are living in the West Bank and the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. This is a real problem. How you can continue living with settlements? How you can continue living with settlements which are every day expanding? and so it's impossible. The only way is to, for the Israelis, is to reach to a solution that a Palestinian independent state in the West Bank, Gaza, and Jerusalem should be established. This is not just for us, it's for them. We are increasing rapidly. Within the coming 15 to 20 years, we'll be the majority. No way they can control the Palestinian people, no way. Now we are around 48% of the whole population that are living in historical Palestine. In Israel, West Bank, Gaza, and Jerusalem. We are increasing the percentage of around 3.6% yearly, you know. So the Israelis are increasing around 2%. So within the coming 15 years, yani, they are expecting that the Palestinian will be the majority, will reach around 54%. Within the coming 30 years, that means will be more than 60%. Can they continue to control another nation with 6 million population? They can't. They can't. So even for their interest, they supposed to realize this issue. Our Prime Minister, he suggested that if there is no way for a Palestinian state, independent state, let's talk about one state with two nations. So they became angry about, you don't want independent state and you are afraid of having one democratic state in Palestine that all people, Christians, Muslims, Jews can live in peace like before 1948, you know. They are really afraid about this idea. So the only way is to give the rights to the Palestinians. There is no way. Some of the Israelis are becoming more aware about this issue, and they are supporting. And unfortunately, they are still minority in the Israeli community, and still they are not more effective, and their impact is very minimum. But I think within the coming few years, as I told you, I'm optimistic. I'm pessimistic now. There is no solution with Sharon at this stage. But within the coming 10, 15 years, nobody can stop the Palestinians to continue their struggle to achieve their independence and their freedom. This is nobody. If you ask the small child in Palestine, and if you ask the old person who is 80 years, you will get the same answer. The Palestinians will continue struggling to get their freedom. This is for sure. When we get it, if it's not within the coming 10 years, let's say within the coming 20, 30 years, but the price will be very high. Not just for the Palestinians, also for the Israelis. This is why with a person like Sharon, he's talking about the Palestinians who are, their hands are covered with blood. Whose hands are covered with blood? Sharon. Since 1956 and in 1967 and in Gaza in the 50s and in Sabra and Shatila in Lebanon and all these massacres for the last 3 years, of course he is responsible. He was also, he was charged for this by his government and the international opinion, you know. So I am optimistic for the future that a solution must be achieved. But what's the price for this? I think it will be too high.
Thanks.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you.